Welcome in Lineup Logic. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. With me, Alex Remizowski. What's going on, Alex?
Not much. Just back again for another one, hoping to improve upon last week, as always.
Always the goal. Quick housekeeping note. If you, I saw some guys asking, they weren't seeing the cheat sheet in the model. You need to be in the $20 Patreon tier. So if you can upgrade on there, or if you want to reach out to Sean, he can set you up where you need to be. As always, follow us on Twitter, hit us in the Slack. I'm at @Roto_Wan, WAN. Alex is at Donald Remington. So that's our greenskeeping for the episode. Keep brief.
I like that analogy.
Obviously, last week was the golf world's rebirth with Tiger Woods as a true contender. Twitter was on fire all weekend. People, canceling plans for Sunday so that they could watch Tiger make a run at it. And he didn't disappoint. He hit a hell of a putt on 17 to get him within one. Just couldn't get up the hill on 18 with his putt. But it was exciting. It was exciting. And I'm sure nobody was sweating more than Paul Casey, because he'd been sitting in the locker room for about 2 hours on a lead. And the last thing he wanted to do was come out and play Tiger Woods in a playoff.
Oh yeah. I had a lot of fun watching that. It was a crazy, crazy finish there. It was like, personally, all day I was just like, I went into the day thinking, all right, this is going to be either Justin Rose or Tiger Woods. We'll see how it turns out. And then Paul Casey put together this crazy round and was in an hour before Tiger and everyone else. Snedeker tanked, Justin Rose disappeared, and then everyone's just sitting there rooting for Tiger. And then he just kept just burning edges on those birdie putts. It was brutal, but it was like he was still in it. He's still in it. Two holes left, needs two birdies. That putt on 17 was just like, I haven't felt anything like that watching golf in ages. That was awesome.
Yeah, vintage Tiger. Yeah, you going into it, and this is the story, like I've heard so many people say all week, is like, just watching it, they turned to either a friend or like if they have a younger son or something, said, hey, he used to make these putts all the time. And so like a whole new generation has gotten to kind of experience what that was. Like Tiger just sinking 30, 40 footers, no big deal to put himself in contention.
I know. It was so funny. Like right when that putt dropped, like you hear on TV, they go, you are kidding me.
Yep.
And then they look over to Tiger and he just has this smile on his face. It's not even, it wasn't even like the Tiger fist pump. He was just smiling like, there it is. And yeah, then he Brant Snedeker in back of him.
Like, yeah, I was going to say. He's just standing there like, what the fuck, man? This guy's going to really just sink that putt and I'll put up a 78 here.
Yeah, he was shaking his head like how did I not?
His body language was great as a pairing with Tiger on that hole.
Yeah, I was loving that. That was funny. It was disappointing that he couldn't pull it off on 18, but I don't know. There's been some chatter that he could have probably played that hole a little more aggressively. He had 9 off the tee.
Yeah, I heard that, but it was somebody else was talking about it. I said he hit iron there all week, and he was just maybe a little shorter than he had been the previous go rounds on that hole. And, if he would have been 5-10 more yards, he'd have been a little more comfortable with his, with, I think he had a 7-iron. And
yeah,
you know, it would have been the difference.
Approach, and that, so that's a long approach shot, and then we saw the pin all the way up there on that hill, Patrick Reed's ball coming back to him to
That was brutal. That was such a Patrick Reed moment.
I know it that was hard to watch, but it was funny.
He's waving it back down.
It was almost like nobody really cared though, because everyone was just waiting to see what Tiger Woods did.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, he could have. It's Tiger Woods, though. It's, you can't question his. I don't know.
No, and I'm, you know, he said his thinking was, if I hit driver and I'm not in the fairway, I can't birdie this hole. If I hit iron, I know I can hit a 7-iron that distance. You know, he's Tiger Woods. It's not a problem for him to hit 190 with an iron. So. That was just his thinking. But Paul Casey won it, had a real great round Sunday. And like I mentioned on Slack, I only played three lineups. I didn't love the multitude of options that I had, but I had Casey in all of them. So that paid off pretty well. And, you know, I kind of stayed more on the cash side this week. Just like I said, because I didn't feel like I had, the nuts on any single lineup. And that's, I saw some people talking and they say, I didn't play any cash. I just played my GPPs and I've got two missed cuts, so I'm out of it. You could have cashed some head to heads with two missed cuts this week. I had a clean sweep, out of probably 20 head to heads because I had one missed cut and it was Henrik Stenson. If you're not playing heavy cash, think about it, because you're at this point, if you've been playing PGA, you've got a feel for it. You know some of the names. You're listening to us. Hopefully you have the cheat sheet in front of you. I'm confident you can put together a lineup that's either going to have no missed cuts or maybe one missed cut on a real tough course. And we've seen that a few times this year, where if you can just have less missed cuts than the people you're going head to head with, you're golden. I was trailing coming into Saturday in every single one of my head to heads almost. But they had two, three, sometimes four missed cuts. I had one, and I knew I was going to make that difference up. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like a week that I think a lot of cash lineups you maybe could have avoided, at least Jordan Spieth being the most expensive guy on both FanDuel and DraftKings. And I, like a few other people, apparently I'm primarily playing GPPs, and I was in a pretty bad spot come the weekend. And it was just like, there were multiple things that happened that I think a lot of people were affected by. But I think if you were trying to build, like you just said, that statistically based cash lineup, like something a little more conservative, where like I think it would really, really pay last week. Like the Kevin Na withdrawal hurt a lot of people. That burned for me, because I just never play Kevin Na, and I'm sitting there Wednesday building lineups, and I like notice that he's just like when this guy is out there and he plays a full four rounds, like he's in it, and he's a good player, and I put him in a couple lines, so that hurt. And then Bryson DeChambeau withdrew. That didn't personally affect me. I know a few people were trying to be cheap playing him. There were like Spieth missed the cut, Stenson missed the cut. I was heavy on both of them, so that hurt. Rory, I don't think either one of us were too much into him, but that's another big name missing the cut. And then, I mean, really, I guess as we move forward here, you got more information to work with. You got more stats to work with. And you just got to take it all into consideration and really think about those contests you're entering.
Yeah, at the very least, get in the $5 single entry double up. it's such a good contest to be in. It's a really big field. It is single entry, so you're not, you know, swimming with sharks on a large scale. So, you know, you can have a miscut and still cash on the right week in that one. And then head to heads, you know, I like in golf because you can build a lineup with limited risk. But let's talk about this week. So go ahead and break the course down for us, Alex. Got the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
All right. Yep. So we are at Bay Hill in Orlando, Florida. It's a 7,400-plus yard course, par 72. It's a course very, very, very familiar to a lot of these pros out here. We have a ton of course history to go off of. There's obviously a few guys who haven't been out here. Some notable players in the field. Tiger Woods has won here 8 times. That is a lot of times that Tiger Woods has won at this course.
Yeah.
We've all played it on the video games, and a lot of people are very familiar with the course. So we're back to the Florida swing.
Especially hole 6, Alex. That is one hell of a unique design. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, the fairway is basically a big C around a giant lake. It's a par 5. You have to, you know, really get there to get to the fairway without going in the drink.
Yep. Yep. Extremely unique. You look at the flyover. I'm a big flyover guy. Yeah. It's a lot of dog legs, a ton of bunkers. I think there's over 80 sand traps on this course, sprinkled around the greens pretty much every single hole. Water comes into play at about half of the holes. It's Florida golf. It's Bermuda grass. So we're pure Bermuda here, which is nice because we can start looking at those stats now. Mm-hmm. A couple unique features would be long par fours, long par threes, and on a 7,400 yard course that's long. It's not like crazy, crazy long, but when you're making up that yardage on the par fours and par threes, it means you have a little more accessible par fives. Yeah. So I think a lot of the scoring here is going to come from par fives, birdies and eagles there. Mm-hmm. Proximity, pretty much. So like a stat I really liked this week is proximity 200 yards plus. So a lot of these par fours, if they're tighter par fours, you're going to see guys hitting less than driver, which is going to leave them quite a few yards into the hole, pushing 200 plus. And then a lot of the par threes are over 200 yards. So you kind of kill two birds with one stone with that one stat.
Yeah.
The rough is going to be long. It's always very long. Mm-hmm. So that's just another reason you want guys that are hitting the fairway. So yeah. You want accuracy. And it's a combination of accuracy and length here.
Yeah, one of my favorite golf Twitter follows, Josh Hornsby's at Fantasy ADHD. He does a thing that he's been doing lately where he does some like layovers of shots that were strokes gained. So he does the whole layout, and you know, the first shots that landed in the fairway are like a blue dot, and the shots that landed off of it are in a bunker or red dots. And he said this is just like such an obvious week for guys who can hit long off the tee. You can see just so many people get punished who are in that middle distance range. So you either got to be really accurate, or you got to be able to hit past the trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even if you look at the last 5 years, you got Mark Leishman, Jason Day, Matt Every, Tiger. Mm-hmm. All long balls, all people who can really do it all. I mean, Matt Every maybe not so much, but Mark Leishman definitely can crush it off the tee. And then even some of the runner-ups, you got like Charlie Hoffman and Justin Rose, Keegan Bradley. Like, distance is not going to hurt you this week.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yep. All right, so let's dive in there at the top. Who do you want to start out with?
All right, so at the top, I guess you got to start with Jason Day here. If you read my article, I pretty much it's been exactly what I put there is exactly how I feel now. It's tough. He's got very good course history. He's priced at 11.8 on DraftKings, which is it's definitely up there, and it makes lineup construction a little more difficult. But past 3 years, he's finished 23rd. I'm backwards here. So he didn't play in 2016. He finished tied in 45th, 17. But before that, 17th, 1st, and 23rd. So he won in 2014. I think what you really have to mention is how he's been playing in 2018. He's only had two starts in this year. He won the Farmers Insurance Open, and then he was runner-up at Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I want to say he's in good form, but he hasn't played since the beginning of February, which, as we know, it's extremely hard to get a gauge on. We saw Henrik Stenson last week, who you're looking at is his tournament log there, and you're like, all right, like, this is an obvious play. And what did he do? He went out and he missed the cut. So at 11.8, I think he's not a sure thing by any means. I think you're going to be able to build very, very good lineups without Jason Day, but I wouldn't fault anyone for playing him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I think we'll talk Tiger in a minute, but I think a lot of people are going to be looking at Tiger, and it's going to be tough to put in Tiger plus one of the guys ahead of him without really compromising on some low prices in the rest of your lineup. So I think just that natural pull from Tiger is going to keep some ownerships low, and any of these guys is an interesting play.
Yeah. So like if you want to think about it like that way, so if we assume Tiger Woods is going to be chalk, remember, you got to take into consideration he has won here 8 times. He's clearly heating up. He is like the hype of the golf world right now. And I think that's enough to say he's going to be chalk.
Yeah.
No matter what way you spin it.
I'll put it this way. His top 10 odds for this tournament are minus 200. That's craziness. Like, I haven't seen a minus for something in a long time.
It's honestly like getting out of hand. Like,
his
win odds are what, like less than 10 to 1, 5 to 1?
Yeah, it's not going to pay much. And, you know, part of that is obviously because the betting public, everybody's going out and just laying some money down on Tiger for this week to see what happens. So it'll be interesting.
Sometimes I just don't understand how it can get to that point, because, like, who wants to bet Tiger Woods or anybody for that matter in a golf tournament with 120 players? I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, if he's chalky, you're right. I think it's going to be very hard to get any of these other higher price guys in. The other three that we haven't mentioned are Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler. At 11-5, 10-7, and 10-3. Out of these three, we saw Justin Rose. We've seen Justin Rose a lot lately. We saw him last week. He was looking great, and he faded on Sunday. However, he only faded to fifth place, and that was after shooting a 72 on Sunday. So he is in very good form. He's played quite a bit lately. He played in Mexico, and he played the Valspar. So that's 4 weeks in a row he's played. 3 weeks. This would be his third week playing. I'm not really that into Justin Rose here at this price. At this price, he's like similar to Jason Day. I have been having trouble with these top guys a little bit lately, because you look at Justin Rose's tournament history. He came in second here last year. He was cut in 2016, didn't play in 2015, and then he got a T9 and a T13 and 14 and 13. So he's another guy that gains strokes at the course, mm-hmm. but is he going to win? I think that's what you need to ask right. yourself, really.
Yeah, I mean, I like Rose this week. I hear what you're saying, though. Like, you could pick any single golfer, and you know, this is a tough course. We're getting into the heart of the season here. Like, there's not that many cakewalks. Any tough course can take a top golfer and make them look bad, you know. And if you're paying over 10K for a guy, just being top 50 doesn't cut it. You know, you need a guy to be top 20, top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you need someone who is not only going to make it in contention on Sunday, but then do something with it and not slowly fade away, which I guess brings us to the next two, which are Rory and Ricky. Rory, I don't even want to talk about because what do you think?
My two cents on Rory, like, I'm right there with you. Like, it's been just a mess this year. I wouldn't touch him except for like the biggest GPP. What I'm really hoping for, and what I'm sure the Golf Channel and whoever's broadcasting the tournament on Saturday, Sunday are all hoping for, is Rory and Tiger going at it. On Saturday and Sunday, you know, that, like, just, you know, the golden days of golf back. So
you see those two in contention on Sunday, and suddenly, like, everything changes. It's like, we've had Jason Day winning, we've had Dustin Johnson winning, we've had Justin Thomas winning, we've had Justin Rose winning, and now we have
Bubba.
Tiger and Rory and Bubba. It is
like Rory's the last one that needs a win before the Masters. So
yeah, like, yeah, it's like rewinding 3 to 5 years, and suddenly we're heading into the Masters with like the most ridiculous looking field ever. Like, I don't even know what I would do in terms of fantasy, like where these guys are going to be priced at. But, you know, as much as that would be interesting to see, I don't think there's any sense in playing Rory this week. He's still 10-7.
Yeah, like, especially on a DFS site, like, I might just throw like a couple dollar ticket down on him and see what happens if it pays.
Yeah, like his betting odds, I'm actually not sure what they're at right now, but 10-7 in comparison to the guys around him, I feel the same way about him as I've felt the past couple weeks. He's another guy, just like Justin Rose, he does gain strokes on the field here, and he has performed well here, but I'm just not into him. I would much rather jump down to either Ricky or Tiger, and a few options we'll talk about in the 9,000s on DraftKings. Ricky, though. Ricky, we haven't seen in a little bit. And if anyone knows me, they know I'm a Ricky guy. I love playing Ricky Fowler, and he hasn't exactly wowed anyone over his past few starts. And I think there's only so long that can last. I know this attitude has been crushing my hopes and dreams lately with certain people like Jordan Spieth, who I'm officially off of until further notice. Good thing I don't have to worry about him this week, but Ricky has gained over 19 strokes here in his last, I think these are 12, in his last 5 years here, 4 years. So last year, he came in tied in third. He missed a cut in 2016, and then in 2015, he came tied in 29th. At 10-3, this is a good looking price for Ricky Fowler.
Yep.
He is 1500 less than Jason Day, 1200 less than Justin Rose. He's cheaper than Rory, and he's just above Tiger. I think the price and the name and the fact he knows Bay Hill are probably the three biggest things for me here. And if you're going to pay up for a guy, I might start lines with Ricky Fowler at the highest this week. Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't think we really need to analyze Tiger, because everybody's playing him anyway. you're putting him in your lineup. You're putting him in at least one lineup this week. That, you know, that, don't lie to yourself. You're doing it.
Yeah, like, you know, like the more I think about it, I'm like, it's so hard to really, like, I think he's going to be high owned just because of what's been going on. But then it's like, the people assume like, all right, I got to play him cash, and then he's going to go lower owned in GPPs because people think he should only be played cash because he's going to be chalky. It gets to the point where you just shouldn't even like concern yourself. Just assume he's going to go high owned and put him in some lineups if you want to watch him probably contend.
Yep. And Ricky and Tiger make a nice pivot point there because they're really close in price. So build a lineup, put Tiger in one, put Rory in the other, or Ricky in the other. And you'll have your Tiger exposure. All right. So jumping into the nines, exactly. Who are a couple of names you like?
And by the way, I think if I have incorrectly thrown out any past performance stats, it's because I've had 2013 through 2017 sitting in front of me, I think possibly backwards. But anyway, we'll move on. All right, so jumping down, the next name I have to mention is Hideki Matsuyama, mm-hmm. who I am once again going to steer clear of. He's coming off of a wrist injury. He withdrew after one round at the Waste Management. Before that, he was actually looking like he was back to form. So I know I mentioned this a few weeks ago. He was like super hot in the middle of last season, and then he kind of disappeared and started playing some gross golf when it mattered toward the end of the season. And then we took the short little fall break there, and he came back and he had some very good starts from the hero. The very small field hero in November and into January, where he finished fourth at the Tournament of Champions and then 12th at the Farmers. And that led us to the Waste Management. We haven't seen him since the very, very beginning of February. I'm personally not at all ready to play him. Do you have any opinions on Hideki here?
Yeah, not, you know, like anything outside of a pretty wild GPP lineup, because he could just set your lineup on fire because he's not cheap. So, you know, not that he can't play well, but it's probably not worth the risk unless you're building many lineups.
Yeah. I think you will be able to get him at a decent ownership here because of the names around him. And he has had some luck at this course. So, I mean, you just can't predict it. We haven't seen him in so long. He could come back and be right there. But I don't like taking guys. I'm not going to go take another guy off of a long layoff like Henrik Stenson last week.
Right.
Like a few other guys we've seen this year. So a couple favorites of mine in this 9K plus range. It's tough. There's a few guys here, but I'm going to stay on Tommy Fleetwood here. And then two other names I want to mention are Alexander Noren and Tyrrell Hatton. Mm-hmm. Those three guys stand out to me. Stenson is a no-go in my book, which is tough because he's had some crazy good course history mm-hmm. here. He's gained so many strokes on the field over his last 5 years here. Tommy Fleetwood is the next in, or Tyrrell Hatton actually coming in tied fourth last year, and then Tommy Fleetwood behind that. But Noren, I know we've talked about him a lot on the podcast the past few weeks that he's played, and he's just been so consistent. And I feel like he's just not a guy that's going to go crazy high owned, even though his price is always very reasonable. But Fleetwood, Noren, and Hatton, I think these prices are great for them. And I think they're all very, very in play.
For sure. Yeah. And on Noren, you know, he's just kind of a vanilla name. He's from Sweden, I believe. So like, yes. not the flashiest guy for sure. But yeah, an excellent, excellent cash play this week. Every week he is, but yeah, that's a nice price for him. Fleetwood, another pretty good cash play. He's not going to hurt you even in his down weeks. He's got some upside to win it though, but Hatton is the one I'm really interested in from a standpoint of trying to find a winner in this range. He looked really good at the World Golf Championship. I think he could make a run at this one.
Yeah, Hatton, like seeing him in Mexico, I was like, I saw the tweet that he was sick.
Yeah.
And I got off of him and I just remember like 4 days straight being like, God damn it. Like,
yep.
Hatton just kept like, I think he was one under the first day, and then it just got progressively better, and he ended up finishing in third. And so he was just like very, very consistent that week, and it kind of taught me to trust him again. And I think there's something to be said about that first week that the European Tour players are coming back to the PGA Tour to start the spring run up to the Masters, that you might not see who that person actually is in their first outing. For him, it was the Honda, and he missed the cut. And then he went over to Mexico, and he started crushing. It's just like great golf there. And I think like that was a very tight course. I know he can hit a pretty long ball there. And if you're going to be successful on that ridiculous course they were playing in Mexico, that like if you miss the fairway, you are punching out. Like, I think he can have success here, and he showed it to us last year coming in fourth. So I really, really like Hatton. And then it's kind of a similar story for me with Fleetwood, only he's played a little more. He actually had luck at the Honda Classic. He came in fourth there. He's kind of been in contention his three rounds so far on the PGA Tour. And I mean, he has seven top tens since October. He's made 13 cuts and 13 starts. Really, really hard to argue with that. Plus a T10 last year at Bay Hill for 9,500. So I don't know if his ownership will be up there if people realize all of those things together, or if maybe people will be like, oh, well, I was playing a top priced Tommy Fleetwood who came in 37th, 4th, and 14th, and maybe be like drawn away from him. So one way or another, right. I'd say.
Yeah, it'll be a little on the high side, I think, but nothing to scare you away.
Yeah. I think with our options, what we've talked about above and the guys in this range, I think there's plenty to offset where I wouldn't be worried about him or Hatton. I'd say they're two of my favorites here.
Right. All right. The eights, there's some interesting names in here. Who tickles your fancy?
So the upper eights, it's a weird range for me. I'm just like, I guess for DraftKings purposes, it's really only three guys, all of which I, as of right now, plan to steer clear of. I think any one of these three names could show you something, but the risk outweighs pretty much anything for me here. And those three names are Patrick Reed, Adam Scott, and Bubba Watson. We've seen them all do pretty good things lately. Patrick Reed almost won last week until that crazy three putt. Bubba Watson won 2 weeks ago. And then Adam Scott has reemerged as a golfer. Like, he was gone for so long and now he's back and he's immediately overpriced. So I think,
I got no trust for Adam Scott. Yeah. I'm not really a Patrick Reed guy, and you know, I had flipped on Bubba, you know, when he first came in, I liked him, and then I got sick of him, and I heard somebody on the radio talking about him and some of the anxiety he struggled with. Like, he's got some serious anxiety, and I'd kind of forgotten about that. and hearing them talk about that, like I'm ready to open my heart back up to Bubba. So I'm going to play him in a tournament lineup this week. I think the course sets up nicely for him, and I feel like he's in a good place with his golf game, getting ready to go into the Masters. So, you know, not for cash, but in a GPP, Bubba at 8,600, he interests me.
Yeah, Bubba definitely went through some shit there. I don't think anyone knows exactly what it was, but it was an emotional win this year when he pulled it off at the Genesis. And I think he pretty much opened up and was like, I mean, he was talking about retiring. He was not himself for so long. And I mean, he's been playing well, and he's got the long ball. We all know that. And he can shape the ball around these dog legs. So I think he can, like, his game lines up well with the course if he's playing well. But I just feel like someone that can get as crazy as he can in every respect with the game, like
he's for sure a risk.
It's a risk. Yeah. All right. So I'll move down to one of my favorite options right now at this price range, and that's Brian Harman. He is finally off of a couple weeks rest, 1 week rest. Mm-hmm. He didn't play last week. He had just like the hottest start to the season. He is only 8,500. He's gained a few strokes on the field in his last five years here. He came in T13 and T17 and 17 and 16, and he came fifth in Mexico. The beginning of the season was just like ridiculous for him, but he played so many rounds, so many tournaments in a row, that I think pretty much his one missed cut, which was the Farmers at the end of January, I think you can pretty much go ahead and say that was due to him playing like five tournaments straight. And I think he showed us what he can do here 2 years in a row. And for someone 8,500, if he can do what he did here last year or even the year before, I think he's worth playing. Below Brian Harman, there's definitely, this is an area that I think like you could just play people in the eights and probably make a contending lineup here, to be honest. Mark Leishman won here last year. He won here last year, and then he came tied 17th in 16, and he missed a couple cuts the few years before that. Mark Leishman is kind of like a new guy as of last year in my book, and his fall run was also very, very good. We saw him miss the cut at the Genesis and then play not so hot in Mexico. So he's a question mark in my book. He's kind of like pushing that Bubba boundary where I just feel a little nervous rostering him. The defending champion is always a bit of a conundrum to me. It's tough because it's like, yeah, they took this down last year, but you know, it gives you a little more pressure heading into this year. And like we just haven't seen that like winning Mark Leishman in quite some time. Is there anyone you feel strongly about in this eight?
Yeah, well, two guys at the bottom of the range that I've been all about lately. Luis Oosthuizen is just like such an easy cash play for me since he's come back to the PGA, and he's still a really good price. He's not gonna set your lineup on fire most weeks. Although he did have a great first round at the WGC, but you know, mostly just a steady golfer and really good for cash games. And then Luke List, I mean, he's into the eights now, and I think that's going to keep his ownership down. He was 7,800 last week, had a pretty good performance. I mean, at that price, like, he's just begging to be played. He's such a long hitter. He's really playing well right now. And even with his length, it has been pretty accurate. My one of the things I'm looking for this week is people, like I said, that can stay out of the trouble by hitting past it. And List can absolutely do that.
He definitely is on my radar here, Luke List. Oosthuizen, I don't know if I'm going to go back to him. 8,200 is a good price for him. He's pretty much been there the past couple weeks, and he's lived up to it. Maybe not so much in Mexico, just because of his third round 76 and finishing in 30th, which we got to remember that was only a 70-something person field. But he did come back at the Valspar and finish 16th. He was very consistent that week. So I'm on the fence about Oosthuizen. However, Luke List, I fully am on board with. I agree with everything you said. And someone who I put in a very, very similar category is Jason Kokrak, who I have oftentimes talked about. Mm-hmm. He can hit the ball a mile. He's been in great form lately. He's got three top tens on the season, including the Valspar last week. He finished eighth last week. And yeah, so it was pretty much his second and fourth round, 67, 68. So he went quietly through there. He was one of the guys I was on. And unfortunately, I probably paired him with like both Spieth and Stenson and probably Kevin Na too. But he has gained 25 strokes on the field in his last five outings here. He's only 8,000. I could see him being owned here, having the course history, being the player he is, and then also being in form. I think for this price, it's a very, very good price. And I think Luke List is in the same boat. We saw him make a run at the Honda. I think Luke List and Jason Kokrak are both like very, very in play here.
Yeah, I think Kokrak, same deal as List, like because they got to that $8,000 tier, like it just people are they've trained their minds to go look at 7,900 and below for values. And there's two of them sitting right here staring you at the face.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we've gotten used to both of them being like 7,600 pretty much every week. And they're up there now, and I think they deserve to be up there. So definitely both in play.
All right, so let's find some values down here in the sevens. What do you got?
So this week, 7,000 to 7,900 is a massive range. There's a ton of players in here, and I think there's a lot of bad options, but I also think there's a lot of very, very good options. A couple of them, we'll talk about in a minute, I think are very underpriced. At the upper tier,
okay,
I'll start with someone who I don't think I might have mentioned him once. Kiradek Afabarnrat at 7,900, who didn't play here last year, but he played here in 2015 and 2016 and came tied in sixth both years. He's coming off of a fifth place finish in Mexico, and we've seen him kind of put it together. He has been talked about on the European tour. He had a very good run from the end of last year into the beginning of this year. And that pretty much consisted of a runner-up at the DP World Tour, top 10 at the UBS Hong Kong. That was in both in November and then in the Abu Dhabi Championship, which we've talked about quite a few times. He came 22nd. And then he came over to the PGA, and he made the cut at the Honda Classic, but didn't really finish too great there. So that's your first round back in the PGA. And we see a little bit of a disappointment. And now we're going to go to Bay Hill, which is probably always his second outing on the PGA Tour. And I think he's capable of quite a bit here. So at 7,900, I admittedly, I know less about the guys. I do some of the guys on the PGA Tour, but judging off of all the stats here, I will tell you where he comes in.
I mean, his name has been at like the periphery of my radar for a few weeks. I played him a couple weeks ago. Like you said, he hasn't hadn't quite delivered yet.
Yeah, and I want to be like on the right side of one of these guys that is one of the European Tour players who's coming over here and maybe having that off round and then coming back to make noise. Another thing I found interesting is what it was. He is over the field's last 24 rounds. Afa Barnrat is number one strokes gained putting on Bermuda grass, which we have again this week. So expect him to make some putts. And I think you got to take him into consideration here.
Yeah, but both so on Afa Barnrat and both another guy I know you like, Emiliano Grillo. They're coming from far away. They played in tournaments in Asia last weekend, and you know both did well. But it's tough getting back to the States, getting on the right clock. So I like them. I'm just a little nervous about that.
Where did Afa Barnrat play last week?
He played in some like he was in like Brunei or something. I read like some small field tournament where he just smoked everyone because no one was playing. Oh,
okay,
in it.
I thought I heard something like that, and I wasn't sure because I didn't see it anywhere. All right, well, that's definitely something to take into consideration. I was going to mention Emiliano Grillo. He's done great here the past 2 years. He seems to be heating up a little bit. He's been on my radar, and then I see him pretty much coming in right toward the top of our model, and he's only 7,600. So I was super interested in him, but definitely one thing to think about is that he played in that Hero Indian Open last week, and it's been a ton of traveling, and he played in the Honda. The Honda was 2 weeks prior to that. So he finished eighth at the Honda though. So that was something I really liked because that course was playing super tough. We saw a lot of guys fall down there and he shot 71, 72, 69, 66. And then he went off to Indy and shoots 65, 68, 78 round three, and then 72 to finish eighth and then sixth. So he's clearly playing well. He's gained 16 strokes on the field in his two rounds at Bay Hill, 17th and 7th. I think the travel is probably the one consideration here. Is he going to have the energy levels to really carry this thing through 4 days? And I think I'm not ready to count him out though. I think I'm definitely going to have a piece of him, and probably Kiradek too.
Yeah,
both of them.
Anybody else in the higher sevens that you're liking this week?
In the upper seventh, I think the last name I'll mention is James Hahn. James Hahn is another guy that's coming in super high in the model at 7,600. So Zach Johnson too. I like Zach Johnson. That's all I'm going to say about him. I like him. I always like him. James Hahn, we saw him at the Genesis and he played well there. He's pretty much all year, he's been like a cut maker who has a chance. And then you add to that just that his game, I think, really lines up well with this course. And he's only, I think all the history we have on him here is last year where he finished tied 49th. He's a guy that I'm taking into consideration here.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. So then dropping down, here's two guys I want you to talk about. So you got Kevin Chappell, a lot of buzz about him. And then Sam Burns, some buzz. I'm more interested in Burns because he's been really rounding into form in his last three appearances. But what do you got on those two guys?
Yeah, so, I mean, Kevin Chappell, I think, simply put, like 7,300 is just insanely cheap for him. He's played here the past 5 years. He missed the cut in 13 and 15. He came in second in 2016. And Kevin Chappell is just a better player than someone who should be priced at 7,300. So that really surprised me this week. That was going to be definitely someone I wanted to talk about here. I mean, like, he hasn't even done anything that like bad at all this year. He finished eighth at Pebble Beach, 20th at the Genesis, and then was middle of the pack in Mexico. He didn't play last week. So with pretty decent course history at 7,300, Kevin Chappell, a guy that we know is like very, very capable of competing with some of the best, he's just underpriced. And I think he could go pretty high owned because I think people are going to realize that pretty quickly. And I think he's a great cash option. I don't see him missing a cut, and I see him having the ability to do much more than that. Sam Burns has been very interesting to watch the past, his past couple outings. I don't really even know like how much there is to say about him. We saw him playing with Tiger in the, I think it was the final round of the Honda, and he just was hanging in there. Like, you see Golf Channel giving pretty much following Tiger around, so they have to follow his playing partner around. And it was Sam Burns who was like making birdies and just having a great time out there. In the Honda, he went 70, 71, 69, 68. And if we remember, the Honda tore people apart. So like he did great there. It was awesome to watch. He finished in eighth place, and that's like saying a lot. And then someone who most of us have never heard of going into their next tournament, the Valspar, 2 weeks later, you would think they're thinking they got something to live up to and probably not live up to it. And he was right in the mix again all 4 days last week at the Valspar, and he ended up finishing in 12th. He faded a little bit on Sunday along with quite a few other guys. And I think he's like ready to make some noise on the PGA. Hopefully I hope we get to see him stick around for a while. I don't know in this field with a few of the other names like Kevin Chappell, like Francesco Molinari, both at 7,300. You got Keegan Bradley at 7,300, Charles Schwartzel at 7,300. You got a couple below too. I don't know that I want to play him necessarily. I don't want to lean too heavily on him this week, but GPP wise, I think Sam Burns will definitely get you a low owned.
Yeah. I like that breakdown at that range. Burns in tournaments and Chappell in cash. Not that you can't play Chappell in a tournament. He should really outproduce his price and be a good value. So sometimes it's just worth eating some chalk down that range for a guy who can put up what Chappell can. Any other names that are value plays for you?
Yeah, I mean, Molinari, like I just said, his course history is like real, real good. His last 5 years, 34th, 5th, 17th, 9th, 7th. And he is priced at 7,300, which is just another like seemingly gross underprice of him. He hasn't done anything crazy like his last four starts on the PGA, but he's made cuts other than the Genesis. He's a good player. We all know of him, and we know, again, what he's capable of, and we've seen him do it here at Bay Hill the past 2 years. He's gained over 37 strokes on the field at 7,300. Like, that's way above Kevin Chappell. That's way above anyone at this range. So I think he clearly stands out. And the nice thing about these two guys, Kevin Chappell and Francesco Molinari, being priced both at 7,300 at the same exact thing, is you might see a little bit of ownership taken off each of them unless people are just straight up playing both of them everywhere, which I highly doubt. And then the other two guys that I just mentioned are Charles Schwartzel and Keegan Bradley, also both at 73. Keegan Bradley always garners ownership. He's got five solid years of course history. He came in third here in 2013 and second here in 2014. There's a lot of options like right here at 7,300. And because there's four of them like stand out to me like that, I think none of them will be like crazy high owned by any means. So I think they're all very much in play and allow for some space up top.
Yeah, I got two guys down here in this real value range that I'm interested in. First one's Kevin Kisner. He had a tough start to the new year, and it wasn't really playing good golf. Kind of got back to it at the WGC with a 29th. Had a good final round there. He's an accurate golfer. So for 7,100. Like that's a price that especially in a tournament lineup, I'm happy to pay that to be able to free up some of those top guys. And then another guy, if you're really going for the top tier, Ryan Armour, he's not going to win a tournament, but he's a decent shot to make the cut at 6,800. And if you're going to go stars and scrubs, like you got to find a guy down in this tier that has a shot to make the cut. And I think he's a guy for sure that can do it.
Yeah. I don't hate either one of those. Kisner does stand out a bit to me. He's had success here a little bit in the past. He missed two cuts coming up to, the WGC, which he was again, middle of the pack in, but 7,100, two interesting stats here over the field's last 24 rounds. He's number one in strokes gained short game and number three strokes gained putting on Bermuda. So he likes the Florida golf. He likes the Bermuda.
Came up on Bermuda.
Yeah, the short game could be huge for him.
I mean, he was in the tens in January. He was over 10K in both January tournaments, coming off of a hot fall. So he's a better golfer than what he's shown, and he's going to turn the corner when he's priced like this. So
I totally agree. And Pebble Beach and the Honda are both very difficult courses that we saw a lot of like very good players fall. And those were his two missed cuts, and that's what's bringing his price down. So I agree with you. I think he's a good flyer here.
All right. So let's real quick talk a little bit of pricing discrepancy. What stood out to you between DraftKings FanDuel pricing?
All right, I'll run through this very fast as I always do. First of all, I had a few more on. People that stand out being favorably priced on DraftKings this week. The first two we just talked about, Kevin Chappell and Francesco Molinari, which is kind of crazy. Actually, that's not actually that crazy now that I think about it, because they are both very priced very well on DraftKings. So they're both 7,300 on DraftKings. Chappell is 10,000 on FanDuel and 9,900, and Molinari is 9,900 on FanDuel. So Chappell is the 19th top price guy on FanDuel, 42nd on DK. Molinari is 20 top FanDuel and 42 on DK. So I would be interested in both of them on DraftKings, as I have already stated. Two other guys that stand out for me on DraftKings, Charlie Hoffman and Kevin Na. Charlie Hoffman, who I think is a good value play this week. He's very interesting around this time of the year. I think we've seen Charlie Hoffman heat up before and during the Masters in years past. And as streaky as he can be and as inconsistent as we've seen him lately, I think he is very interesting at 7,100 on DraftKings. He's 9,200 on FanDuel. That would be 33rd top price guy on FanDuel, 60th on DraftKings. So I would focus on him and DraftKings. And then Kevin Na, 8,200 or 8,900 FanDuel, 7,100 DraftKings. 7,100 is crazy low for Kevin Na. That's the 60th top price guy in DraftKings, 46th price on FanDuel. He screwed a lot of people over last week. He is like Mr. Withdraw. He had a neck injury reportedly, and I don't think we've heard anything more on that injury. I've been looking into it, haven't found anything. I don't expect him to pull that again this week, but I think you have to take caution because it hurts. It hurts when that happens to you. Some guys to favor on FanDuel, Luke List, 9,200 FanDuel, 8,100 DraftKings. That's 33rd on FanDuel and 18th on DraftKings. So I'd play him on FanDuel. Ian Poulter, who I don't like at all, and I don't like him even more than I didn't like him a couple weeks ago when I last put him in one of my lineups. He is 8,600 on FanDuel, 7,400 on DraftKings. That's 57th on FanDuel, 36th top price on DraftKings. Play him on FanDuel. And then the last two, Harris English and Lucas Glover, two guys that will randomly make noise. And I think both of them are actually very interesting options. Harris English is 8K on FanDuel, 7,200 on DraftKings. That's 79th versus 51st. Lucas Glover is 8,300 FanDuel, 7,500 DraftKings, and that is 70th versus 32nd. So Lucas Glover even more so attractive on FanDuel.
Right, and English is a big hitter. So yes. somebody to think about. Kevin Na for sure pulled a bit of an Al Cervic. Oh, my arm, it's broken.
Yeah, I know. That was so weird. I don't even know what to think. And he's done it in the past too. So
I sort of saw something that had something to do with, you might have even said it, something to do with his world golf ranking, something like that, whatever. But yeah, then I'll hit some tags here for people off FanShare. Not a great feel for it. Looking at the tags, I mean, Tiger is dominating the tags. Obviously due to last week, due to the expectations this week. So it's kind of hard to tell what ownership is going to be because of that. I do think he's going to be really, really owned, maybe in the 40s, which is pretty crazy. If you have a question on anybody, as always, hit me up in the Slack, tag me at Roto1 and ask me, is this guy too chalky to be playing in a tournament lineup? Some other notable tags, Kevin Chappell coming in second in tags. So he's a guy in a cash lineup you really have to strongly consider because, you going head to head with somebody, not having him and the salary that he frees up is kind of a double whammy if he does well. Appy Barnrad, Emmanuel Grillo, decent amount of tags, both in the 20s there. Fleetwood, Jason Day, Alex Noren, Justin Rose, all right around 20, which is notable because Ricky and Rory are only down in the low teens. So some ownership indication there on those two guys, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I was actually going to say a couple guys that I had my eye on as probably being chalky with pretty much nothing to back it up would be Tiger Woods, Tommy Fleetwood, Kevin Chappell, and Francesco Molinari.
Yep, so, all on the first page.
That strengthens that take there.
And then some lower price guys that are getting tagged: Sam Burns, Jason Kokrak, Keegan Bradley. Some guys we talked about there that, it's always good to see some tags. Like you don't want to be out on the limb, be the only person in the golf world talking about this guy that you have a good feeling on.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's what I got off of FanShare. And then to wrap things up, as always, let's throw a few darts, Alex. We talked about doing a big hitter as a dart, somebody who's very accurate as a dart, and then a comeback player as always. You got anybody holstered, ready to go?
All right, I do. All right, so big hitter, long ball guy. I like this week at 8,000 on DraftKings. Gained a bunch of strokes at Bay Hill. Had some pretty decent tournament history. Is Jason Kokrak. He's definitely my my long ball guy of the week. Accuracy wise, Zach Johnson, who I didn't talk much about earlier, but has also had a good deal of success here, and he really knows the course too. He's made the cut and made some moves the past 5 years, and he is historically a guy who's going to keep it in the fairway. And my comeback player of the week is cheating a little bit because he didn't even play, and I'm going to say Kevin Na, even though he scares the shit out of me.
All right, so for me, big hitter, we talked about him already, Luke List. You know, he's been working out really well for me. I'm going to ride the wave. I think he's got big things coming in his career, so I'm happy to play him at 8,100 on DK. Then an accurate player, and just mentioned him as well a minute ago, Ryan Armour. Looking at the list of fairways hit percentage-wise this year in 2018, he's third with 70% of fairways hit, which is a ridiculous number. He's up there with old man Ken Duke for fairways hit.
Like, that is impressive. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so that's just, I mean, it's a short term thing. It's only since 2018, but like, yeah, he's not going to win the tournament, but he's going to be top 50. He's going to get you 4 days of golf. Yeah, he's fine in tournaments too because his ownership's low. If he does make a little bit of a run, and then my comeback guy, Kevin Streelman, pretty uncharacteristic that he missed a cut. He's one of my favorite cash plays. I think he'll get things straightened out. And 7,100 is, you know, a tad below what his price should be. So you get a little value there. You know, it's not a tough week to build a cash lineup, I don't think, if you focus in on the middle tiers pricing wise. So consider that when you're building the cash lineup.
Yeah, I'll say very quickly, Kevin Streelman, I think just the fact that I've barely heard anything about him, and this is after, like, if you take into consideration what we've said week after week after week, is like he's going to make cuts, and he might do more. And then he misses one cut, and suddenly, like, everybody hates him and doesn't trust him. He's 7,100. Right. Like, you're going to play, like, Sam Burns or Kevin Streelman. Like, I'm kind of bound to trust Kevin Streelman a little more, to be honest. So I really like that. I like that call here.
Yeah, for sure. He opens up some salary at the top. But that's what we got time for this week, guys. Hit us up in the chat with any questions. Show us the lineups, and cash some golf lineups coming into the Masters here. Alex, take care.
Yep. Good luck, everybody. Let's for those of you who haven't had much luck lately, this is the week to turn it around as we head to the Masters.
There you go.